This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The town of Normal will get $10 million from the pandemic relief bill.
We certainly would love to spend some of those dollars on capital projects, which result in job creation.
City Manager Pam Reese says the town also hopes to reinstate some budget cuts made because of the pandemic. Plus, the redistricting process begins for the McLean County Board. Republicans want fewer districts to boost rural representation. Democrats want more urban districts. Bloomington Normal's longest-serving plumber tells you about his life and work, and hear about a right to repair that electronics manufacturers don't want you to have. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Year over year, Bloomington Normal job losses are starting to reflect the onset of the pandemic. The State Department of Employment Security reports the Twin Cities had 5,500 fewer jobs in March than it did in March of last year. The February drop in jobs was 6,300, suggesting the last half of March saw about 800 jobs disappear in Bloomington Normal as the pandemic shut down society. Numbers going forward should not reflect such a stark difference in the size of the labor market year over year. The unemployment rate for Bloomington Normal in March was about 5%. Remote workers across the country are moving to smaller towns in pursuit of a higher quality of life. Bloomington Normal might be an option for that. Patrick Hoban leads the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council. He says a consultant reached out to market the community to remote workers, but Hoban says now's not the best time.
I'm really afraid that we're going to hire so many remote workers and they're going to take up our housing stock that we're not going to fill all the jobs that we have. So I'd rather focus on getting people to fill the jobs that we have then go after the remote workers.
Hoban says the EDC is already working with local colleges to develop more workers as companies like Rivian hire in numbers. Hoban says the Twin Cities needs to sustain the talent it has. The Normal city manager says the town has several options to spend the more than $10 million in pandemic relief money that will stimulate the economy. Pam Reese says staff will make recommendations to the council next month.
Some things that I would like to see would be reinstating some of the funds that we've used in the past to support organizations, possibly the Harmon Arts Grant Program.
Reese says capital projects to create jobs will also be on the list of recommendations. Restoring job cuts at the town could also happen. She says the first $5 million will come from the Federal American Rescue Plan soon. The second half of the money will arrive near the end of 2022. A new report from State Farm shows dog-related injury claims are on the rise in the pandemic. State Farm paid nearly $157 million in dog bite injury claims last year. The sharpest spike was at the start of the pandemic. Heather Paul is State Farm's dog behavior expert. She says tension and uncertainty are to blame.
It was clear that dogs were picking up on our anxiety. And we were also, in a sense, invading their space. Our dogs and pets that are used to us being gone for the day where they can have quiet time, they had to live with us 24/7, and that can be a little nerve-wracking.
Paul says dogs, like their humans, adjusted over time. Dog bite claims have started to level off. She says State Farm fears a second wave could come as people return to normal lives and pets get separation anxiety. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
But the ones I have now feel like they're like bionic ears, because like if I'm in a restaurant and there's background noise, I can adjust those so that they just go a certain way.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. The city of Bloomington owes the town of Normal a fair amount of money, perhaps $600,000. It's over properties such as the Crossroads Center and other west side areas in the former Metro Zone, as well as Carl, Broman, Rivian, and Bridgestone Firestone that use Bloomington water and Normal sewer service. Normal City Manager Pam Reese lays out the mishap that has lasted years.
So what we've discovered recently in conversations with the city of Bloomington is that there has been a sewer billing mix-up, and staff from Bloomington and Normal are working together to get this resolved. And, I can't really identify what the reason is why the interruption occurred, but Bloomington has done joint utility billing for the water and sewer services to these properties, and historically had collected the user fees and then remitted to Normal our share for the sewer bill. And of course, then they retained the water portion. What we discovered is that there had been some sort of a billing snafu. And while Bloomington had issued the utility bill for both the water and sewer and collected the user fees, they hadn't remitted the revenues to Normal from those sewer fees. So we're working with Bloomington just to calculate what amount is due, and then we'll just move forward.
How long a period did the non-remittance go?
Quite some time. We think it's gone back about 9 years.
So what does the town think is owed?
Well, we're working on Bloomington. We're relying on Bloomington to make that calculation. At this point, we're talking with Bloomington about potentially using an outside third party, an auditor, to look through to make sure that everything gets resolved. Moving forward, we just want to make sure we get everything written down and we can all work from the same point, and so these sorts of things don't happen in the future. Right now, Bloomington has indicated that they believe the calculation might be closer to about $600,000 that they would have in a liability account for that collection. But again, we'll get this resolved, and I think moving forward it'll be a pretty simple process.
If Bloomington believes it's about $600,000, does Normal have a different estimate that leads you to ask for an outside auditor?
No, we don't have any reason to believe it would be something different. But clearly, I think just for all parties to feel confident moving forward, for all of our elected officials to feel confident, I think it does make sense. Mr. Gleason has suggested it. We've been on board with the possibility of having an auditor take a look. We want to make sure we're starting from a clean slate moving forward.
Have you triaged how the oversight happened?
Not really, not at this point. We've gathered some information, want to make sure we're all working from the same data points, and we can certainly look back and say, why did this happen and how did this happen? But I think, equally as important is to determine just the amount due and how we prevent something like this from happening moving forward. We don't even have anything in writing that we can identify where we've identified that Bloomington will do the joint billing and remit to Normal, but that had been the practice for many years. Why it was never put down in writing in any kind of agreement, I don't know. But again, moving forward, it does make sense to do that.
I hear tell that there was a pandemic relief bill that passed Congress. What are the implications in the amount of money that the town of Normal will receive through that bill? And how do you plan to use it?
And you're referring to the American Rescue Plan, ARP. We understand that the town's allocation would be about $10.4 million overall. And we expect to get the first 50% of that in May. Staff will be putting together a plan on how we recommend those dollars be allocated. And then we'll get council feedback and see how they feel about that. I've talked with Mayor Coos about the possibility of having a work session in May to talk about and get council's reaction to a plan on how to allocate those federal dollars. But what we're looking at is there's a pretty broad brush on how those dollars can be spent at the local level. And while We certainly would love to spend some of those dollars on capital projects, which result in job creation. We also am hopeful that we can also put together a plan where we can use funds for maybe reinstating some of the cuts that we made in our tight budget year. We eliminated some of our financial support of organizations, and we eliminated positions, of course. It would be nice if we could be in a possibility of maybe reinstating a couple of our positions that had been eliminated. But some things that I would like to see would be reinstating some of the funds that we've used in the past to support organizations, possibly the Harmon Arts Grant Program and support of other organizations in the community that I think really relied on the town's assistance in the past, Bone Historic Preservation Grant, possibly. So we'll have a list of things that we'll present to council and get their feedback and be ready to go. $5 million is wonderful. Ultimately, $10 million, we've got to wait toward the end, I believe, of 2022 to get that second payment. But you know, when you talk about capital investment, those dollars will go pretty quickly. So we want to be very strategic in how we use those funds.
With vaccination rates rising, there are varying rates of a return to normalcy. The town, of course, is going to have to be nimble as it plans activities and cultural events over the summer. What is the shape of that according to current thinking?
Well, one thing we learned last year going through the COVID year is I have to say that the pandemic has drawn out the creativity and resilience of a lot of staff. And so this year they've put together staff in the cultural arts area, as well as the Parks and Recreation Department, have created a plan that we think fits within the Restore Illinois guidelines to host some events. For example, Lounge About the Roundabout. We intend to have our first Lounge About event May 15th, which is a Saturday. And that will be the first time in over a year that we've had an organized activity in the center part of Uptown. So the Children's Discovery Museum is planning to reopen under Restore Illinois guidelines on May 1st to members. Our goal would be to be in a position where we can open to the public, hopefully by Memorial Day, and have a limited crowd size in the Children's Museum. Our planning for Uptown events reflect pushing some things off till the fall, when we believe we're hopeful we'll be in the governor's bridge plan status of Restore Illinois. So we're looking at delaying our historically held June event of Make Music Normal, pushing that out till September, and maybe spreading out from Uptown to include not only Uptown venues, but perhaps ConnieLink Amphitheater on South Linden. So again, trying to be nimble and adapt to what we believe the restrictions will be, where we can limit crowd size if possible, or at least provide outdoor setting where masks would be recommended, but people can rather easily socially distance.
That's Normal City Manager Pam Reese. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. A McLean County Board Committee heard several recommendations to reshape the county's top governing body. Eric Stock reports a member of the committee argues the county redistricting process lacks fair representation.
The County Board's Executive Committee held the first of three public hearings on the county's once-a-decade process to draw its district maps following the latest census. The County Board currently has 20 members, including two from each of 10 districts. County Board Member Elizabeth Johnston proposed the county double the number of districts from 10 to 20 and give each district one representative instead of two. Johnston says reducing the size of each district would give the public a stronger connection with their county board member.
In Shenoah, their closest board member is 30 miles away. That's almost the distance from my house to Lake Morton. We're a big county, and I would like to see us make sure that we have representation for each community. in our county.
Two others at the hearing called for fewer board districts. Anna Ziegler, assistant manager of the McLean County Farm Bureau, stressed the need for rural representation.
We believe that reducing the number of districts will empower every voter, both urban and rural, to vote for a larger percentage of the board. Instead of just voting for two county board members, every board member would have the opportunity to elect three, four, or five, depending on the final number of districts.
Executive Committee member Lori Wohlrab, the only Democrat of the nine-member panel, slammed the county's redistricting process.
We have not discussed our goals, what tools we will use to achieve our goals, or how we will measure any end products against our set goals, and how we will meet the requirements of state and federal law.
Wohlrab says the executive committee lacks diverse representation. She noted the committee has eight Republicans and one Democrat, while the county board is nearly even. She says the committee also lacks age or gender diversity and has no one of color. The executive committee is made up of chairs of the county board's oversight committees. County board chair John McIntyre has said he hands out committee leadership posts based on experience. The committee plans two more public hearings on April 26th and May 3rd. It plans to have a final proposal for the county board to consider in mid-May. I'm Eric Stock.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
I didn't remember that when you pulled a straw out of a wrapper, it made noise. So those kind of things were just like a shock to me that they make a sound and I didn't know it.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Consumer advocates say the pandemic has shown why we need right to repair laws. Sabrina Clevenger with the Illinois Public Interest Research Group says a majority of consumer electronics manufacturers don't provide parts or information for consumers or repair shops to make basic repairs, and those gadgets often get thrown out long before it's necessary. Terry Ballantini runs an electronics repair store in Bloomington. He tells Eric Stock the pandemic helped his business, but manufacturers make repair work difficult and expensive for the consumer.
Our business really grew a bit last year because of the pandemic. Unfortunately, people were home, staying home. Kids were doing online, you know, Zoom classes. Parents were working at home. People were just breaking left and right. And so the majority of the things that we saw an increase were tablets, gaming computers, and cell phones, screens and batteries, you know, they would just drain out. So it's amazing that just this influx of broken items because of the pandemic.
And so how did this become a problem for you?
It has been difficult, you know, more difficult over the last year as Apple and Samsung and other manufacturers grow in their product line. They are making it more difficult for the small repair shop on the corner like us. They're making it difficult. We used to replace batteries tenfold every day on smartphones, and we still do. But now if you replace an iPhone battery, you'll get a message that says, oh, this may not be a genuine Apple battery. You might want to be careful for that. And that questions our ability of doing a good repair or people like us. And so when you have circumstances like that, it puts doubt and fear in front of a customer that shouldn't be there, because we have the absolute right of fixing our devices and should have that right. And that's what this whole right to repair law is about.
So what is the risk then to the consumer who takes it into your place of business as opposed to taking it back to the manufacturer?
Well, the first thing is inconvenience. You know, I mean, we alone today, we've had customers that come in that are getting pop-ups on their iPad or their phones that they can't get solid answers through Apple, or driving 2.5 hours from, you know, from Bloomington Normal all the way up to Chicago or St. Louis to visit an Apple store. So it's that frustration from those customers that, you know, they rely on us to help them.
And Terry, have you had to turn customers away at any point because they felt that they couldn't have you work on it for fear of perhaps losing their insurance, if you will?
Overall, no. Not really. We do lose customers that come in that want us to be an Apple, you know, certified store, and we are not an Apple certified store. There are some of those that are out there in the nation. We're not. So we don't lose customers overall for that. I think we've built a good reputation, Eric, over the last 9 years that we've been in business, that people know who we are, that we are local, that we are a small business, that we employ local, and we do a good job. And like Sabrina even said further, is that sometimes we know better on a fix than an Apple employee up in Chicago. They've not been in these phones as many times as we have. We've done thousands and thousands of repairs.
To go beyond Apple, there's certainly the behemoth in this conversation. Are there others that have posed problems too that are perhaps, in your view, scaring customers away from taking it to businesses like Terry's?
I would defer to Terry most for the consumer electronics, but there are definitely some other large companies outside of the consumer stuff that have been extremely problematic. And the two main buckets that falls into are really for farming, which is obviously a big thing here in Illinois. John Deere makes it really hard to repair their tractors, which leads to a lot of delays in for small farmers. And then the other one that we saw a lot over the summer and through the pandemic really was that a lot of medical equipment manufacturers also use the same tactics and make it really difficult for hospitals to repair essential equipment. And one of the issues that came up was ventilators this summer during the pandemic. We talked to a lot of hospitals across the country with our national team that had in-house technicians who were capable of repairing that equipment, but it was software locked or they didn't have access to the diagnostic tools that they needed to fix it. And so these ventilators just sat unused in hospitals for weeks waiting for a manufacturer to come out to repair it.
That's Sabrina Clevenger with the Illinois Public Interest Research Group and electronics repair store owner Terry Ballantini with Eric Stock. The research group says Illinoisans dispose of 429,000 tons of electronic waste every year. Clevenger says the group is talking to lawmakers about drafting right-to-repair legislation. Consumer advocates have begun similar efforts in 25 states. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. Curtis Henry Sr. has been dealing with pipes and poop for 57 years. The Bloomington Normal Plumbers Union is celebrating its longest standing member. Over that time, Henry has seen the trade and the community evolve. Dana Vollmer reports.
Plumbing was in the family for Henry. His uncle, Lewis Garrison, was the first black plumber in Bloomington. Henry calls him Old Man Garrison. He was well known around town and helped bring many other black men into the profession. Henry was born and raised in Louisiana, but his uncle thought he'd lead a better life here.
They wanted to bring me up here for me to go to school. See, because I was one of them bad boys. Didn't want to go to school. They didn't want to do this. And he tried to get me to come to Bloomington. And I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't listen. So one day I got upset with my dad, my mom, and I jumped in my car and I started driving around. And then finally I wind up in Illinois.
This was in the 1940s. Henry was just a teenager. Things weren't easy in Bloomington Normal either. The first time Henry tried to help out with a job, he filled in a hole in someone's yard after his uncle's crew finished a job.
When the man come back that Monday morning, he said, "Who living this grandma up over here?" Old Man Garrison said, "Well, my nephew done that." He said, "Man," he said, "they'd have caught him on that back hole." He said, "They'd have locked his ass up in jail." That's exactly what he said. Because, see, black people wasn't allowed on these machines around here.
The next time around, Henry did it all by hand. He dug out a 6-foot by 5-foot hole with nothing but a shovel in under 4 hours, much to the surprise of his uncle.
He got out that truck, and he come and he looked, and I had all under the pipe, clean up everything, the whole thing done. He went and got two of the plumbers out of his shop and brought them there to see what I've done, because he said we would hire people and it would take a day and a half to do what I've done in 4 hours. So that's when he starts saying he's going to make a plumber out of me.
Henry learned plumbing the same way many others did, in his uncle's basement on Empire Street. Soon enough, he was working on some of the biggest projects in the community.
My first biggest job that I had in Bloomington, Illinois was at State Farm. I put the first sewer into that building. On the west side of State Farm, there was nothing but a pond, and people used to fish and hunt out in that pond. So that's where the sewer was, in that pond.
Henry also did work on Bloomington High School and newly constructed buildings on the campus of Illinois State University. Henry says black men weren't always welcome on job sites.
When I started my job, it was hard, because you was only allowed to do some job, and some job you couldn't go on. That's the way it was. But we, like we said, just do what you can do, and if they don't lie on that, they don't want you to do that, then that was fine.
That changed over nearly 6 decades in the industry. Henry says homeowners were usually respectful if you follow one simple rule.
I go in the house, and I take my shoes off at the door, got the plumbing work done, and then walk right on out there.
Henry says not all the changes are for the better. He says the quality of construction has degraded over the years, and plumbing is no exception.
I'm going to be honest with you. I would not put no plastic pipe in nobody's house in this world. And I wouldn't run that plastic pipe in nobody's house for drinking water. That's not healthy. I don't go out there and preach that because they'll run me out of Bloomington, so I kind of keep my mouth shut.
The next generation of plumbers still rely on Henry as a source of wisdom and mentorship. Henry says he gets calls wanting advice on plumbing dilemmas, and he says he can solve them without even seeing the job.
Plumbing work is not hard. You just got to understand. Understand what to do and what not to do. And to me, it's easy.
Henry hasn't worked in 3 years. His wife got sick and needed a full-time caregiver. She passed away in November, and then his daughter died of cancer in February. It's been a hard year, and to top it all off, Henry hurt his back and isn't able to move very well. At age 87, most people would be happy to just kick back and relax, but Henry's ready to get back to the trade. He says he misses it a lot.
My back get better. I just may come out and try to do 50 more years plumbing.
When he's back on his feet, Curtis Henry says his first call will be down to the Union Hall. I'm Dana Vollmer.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.